evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
So overall, just to tell you that it is going on very well. People are streaming to different polling stations to cast their vote. And the information is that whenever you cast your vote, you go back to your house or to your residence and they wait for the results.
Senegalese go to the polls on Sunday to choose a new president.
They were able to isolate these issues yesterday. And I just do the committee still meeting again to thrash out the most urgent matters. Then on Monday, the larger group, the Hall of Nation players will all meet again and probably start negotiating on the issues.
Striking doctors in Kenya plan to meet government representatives for dialogue on Monday.
Those who have tried, they have faced a lot of resistance from the community because the community has failed to accept and embrace persons with disabilities.
And the chairperson of the Movement for Democratic Change, or MDC, for Disabilities calls for the creation for a political space for persons with physical impairments. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Senegalese voters go to the polls Sunday to choose a new president to replace outgoing President Macky Sall. The president's second and final year term ends on April 2nd. 19 presidential candidates, including a female business executive, are competing to lead the Francophone West African country. Polls are scheduled to close at 6 p.m. local time. For the latest update, I reach reporter Alpha Jallo in the Senegalese capital, Dakar.
Voting is going peacefully. The atmosphere is very calm. And people have started, you know, streaming to different polling centers in the early morning, despite the chilly, weather, because it's a bit cold. But some of the polling stations I visited, I found there are very long queues, but everything is, you know, orderly. So overall, just to tell you that it is going on very well. People are streaming to different polling stations to cast their vote. And the information is that whenever you cast your vote, you go back to your house or to your residence and they wait for the results.
When does the Electoral Commission plan to release the results of this presidential election on Sunday?
Normally, immediately, the polling stations have closed at 6 p.m. Some provisional results will start trickling in. And it will continue throughout the night until the following day tomorrow. And then, but final results will be announced by the Constitutional Council 72 hours after the elections, let's say about 3 days. That's the time when final results will be tallied.
Voters are choosing between 19 candidates. You have one female candidate who is a business executive, Anton Babacar Ngom. Who are the favorites?
Well, this election is going to be keenly contested. For the first time that, you know, Senegal got about, 19 candidates for the presidential elections, including, as you have rightly said, one lady, Anta Babacar Ngom. Two favorites might come from the camp of the opposition, the main opposition, Ousmane Sonko's camp. You know, Sonko was, denied for the presidential race, and then he filed in his deputy Basiru Jomai Faye, so Jomai President 24, and then also President Macky Sall Chosun Haya, Amadou Ba, of the ruling APR party and the coalition Benno Bokoyaka. So they are the favorites in this presidential election.
Some are suggesting that perhaps there could be second round or a runoff of this presidential contest. What are you hearing on the ground?
If you just follow the campaign and then some of the analysis given by politicians and also high-profile electoral, expert, they will say that it is not likely that anybody can win this election during the first round. But the main opposition, the coalition, Jumai President, they are optimistic that they can win. Because just about less than 2 days before the election, they got a very big, heavyweight. That is, Karim Wade, the son of former President Ablai Wade, who rallied to give them more support. So they are saying that with the support of Karim Wade and all the Parti Démocratique Sénégalais members, it is likely that they are going to win in the fourth round.
That's reporter Alpha Jallo. He spoke with me from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. The Deputy General Secretary of the Kenya Medical Practitioners, Pharmacists and Dentists Union, or KMPDU, says representatives of the group plan to meet officials of the government for dialogue on Monday. This, Dr. Dennis Miskela says, is part of the effort to find solutions to the demands of the striking doctors who have also withdrawn emergency services. Observers say the strike is making it difficult to find effective healthcare delivery in the East African nation. The KMPDU is the largest group of medical professionals with at least 8,000 members. For more on the coming dialogue and expectations, I reach Dr. Dennis Miskela.
We agree that was an inaugural meeting, and both parties gave names that formed a subcommittee. The subcommittee is supposed to isolate the issues and prioritize them on based on the urgency. That the most urgent things are sorted out before the strike is called off, and then the others can be thrashed out for long-term solutions, even as services resume. So they were able to isolate these issues yesterday, and I just review the committee still meeting again to thrash out the most urgent matters. Then on Monday, the larger group, the whole of nation players will all meet again and probably start negotiating on the issues.
I understand the doctors, your colleagues have also stopped providing emergency services, which some people say is a big blow to healthcare delivery in Kenya.
Yes. They stopped because the government kept on digging in. So if, when they dig in, we dig in too. We had given the emergency services, and instead of them attempting to solve the issues, for example, the doctor intern issue, when we are just supposed to start our conversations, then the Minister for Health decides to put across a circular that was reducing the intern doctor's salary by 91%. So, like, you can't be here trying to solve the current impasse, but you are creating more bottlenecks. So, like, then let's stop even the emergency services, because now you're playing games with us, you know?
But wouldn't this action also lead to severe damage to the healthcare system that is already damaged as a result of this strike, which could also lead to more deaths of Kenyan citizens that you swore to protect and serve?
The person who swore to protect Kenyan citizens and Kenyan workers, be it a patient or a doctor, is the government. So when the government goes on strike, then it's up to the government to be called out on. For us as workers, we are just responding to 7 years of waiting, 7 years of begging, 7 years of suing them in court and them ignoring court orders. So I still stand by what I told you last week. That is the government on strike, not the doctors.
So how confident are you that the talks that officially begins to resolve your concerns on Monday will be resolved?
As a union, we remain hopeful. We are optimistic, and that's why, despite 7 years of inactivity from government side, we have always remained hopeful. So the moment we lose hope, then we lose everything. So we come in goodwill. We hope government also can approach the talks with goodwill. Although we say that goodwill is something that should be earned from previous commitments that have been fulfilled. So that's what we are challenging the government, so that it can follow up on their previous commitments.
Well, critics say that withholding emergency service by doctors is like not negotiating in good faith, even ahead of the Monday planned negotiation, because they said you should be able to negotiate in good faith without preconditions to help resolve this amicably and expeditiously.
Not negotiating in good faith is when the government continues to dig in and issue more annoying, more frustrating circulars. Because the CS of Health knows better that we have disagreed on the delay of the posting of interns. So for her to go ahead during this crisis to write a letter to purporting to reduce the salaries by 91% is like adding fuel to an already volatile situation. So that's what I call lack of good faith. For us, we have always been good faith, but when we see that the other side is taking us for granted, then as workers, the only power we have is the power to withhold our labor. Then they have the power to slash salaries, they have powers to jail people, they have powers to issue threats. For us, the only power we have is the power to withdraw our labor, and that is the power we are exercising.
Dr. Dennis Meskela is the Deputy General Secretary of the Kenya Medical Practitioners, Pharmacists and Dentists Union, or KMPDU. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. In Uganda, a parliamentarian from the governing National Resistance Movement, or NRM, says citizens are tired of divisions and want to love their country irrespective of their political or religious affiliations. David Kabanda is also spokesperson for the Patriotic League, a civil society group led by Muhoozi Kainerugaba, the son of President Yoweri Museveni. His reaction follows accusations that the Patriotic League of Uganda is a platform to enable Muhoozi to succeed his father, long-term President Museveni, who has been in power since 1986. The group, local media reports, is generating attention among the youth with its activities, which are covered on social media platforms. Parliamentarian David Kabanda tells me that the objective of the group is to encourage patriotism and unity among all Ugandans.
The Patriotic League of Uganda's main agenda and objective was to unite the people who were divided by politicians. Yet Uganda is bigger than all these political parties. Ugandans are tired of politics of divisionism, politics that is dividing them, politics of hatred, politics of tribe in our country. And maybe Ugandans are yearning for a peaceful transfer of change. That's why to us as the Patriotic League of Uganda is a blessing that we have come to provide a solution of patriotism. We want to preach patriotism so that Ugandans can love their country and make it a priority than making their political parties a priority.
Does that mean that anybody or who is a Ugandan from any political party can be part of this Patriotic League of Uganda?
For example, myself, I belong to the National Resistance of Movement. We have so many members in the Patriotic League of Uganda who come from the National Unity Platform, which is the main leading opposition party in Uganda, namely Honorable Kagabo Twaha, we have Honorable Jimmy Rwanga, and so many others. The Patriotic League of Uganda is non-partisan, non-denominational, and non-sectarian. We welcome everybody, regardless of your political affiliation.
What do you say to those who are of the opinion that it's a subtle way of coming up with a civil society or an NGO that will soon become a political party in Uganda?
The associates or supporters of Patriotic League of Uganda, including myself, love and pray that General Muhoozi Kainerugaba, the chairman of the Patriotic League of Uganda, stands for the presidency in Uganda. But those are not the values of Patriotic League of Uganda. I want to assure you that yes, Ugandans want him to run for the presidency in Uganda, but he cannot run under PLU because it is not registered as a political party.
Are you therefore saying that there is no chance that an NGO, as you call it, will not be subsequently registered as a political party and stand or compete in elections in Uganda, let's say in the next 2 years when general elections are scheduled to be held in Uganda?
We have the General Popular Congress next year in Kampala. The members in the General Popular Congress will take a decision whether we should front our chairman as the presidential candidate or not. But for now, we are still bringing back the hearts of Ugandans that were divided by these politicians who are looking for their own things.
So if the people decide in the Congress that you should become a political party, wouldn't that be deceiving supporters from other political parties who have been encouraged to join?
Patriotic League of Uganda will stay. Those who want him to run for the top seat will be advised to go and form a political party. But PLU will stay and do its civic work as it has been doing.
Parliamentarian David Kabanda is spokesperson for the Patriotic League. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Political analysts in Tanzania say the vice president's threat to resign over a water shortage in the northern district appears to be a political campaign move ahead of next year's general election. Visiting Mwanga district in the country's north, Vice President Philip Mpango threatened to step down. This following a persistent water shortage problem, a government project with an estimated cost of $100,000 aimed to resolve the problem is yet to be completed after nearly 20 years. Local media reports the water project is about 90% complete. Analysts say it appears the government wants it completed before campaigning begins for the elections. For more analysis, I reach Faraja Lugumi. He is a lecturer at the University of Dar es Salaam.
For us, we consider that just as a political discourse to seek for political mileage, to show himself that he is seriously determined to solve the problem. Otherwise, within this short time, if nothing happens, then he's going to resign. To us, we consider this just as a political campaign, as the other campaigns that are done by the politicians. Nothing else we would expect.
But Faraja, the question a lot of people are here asking is, the project was started close to 20 years ago. So what will his resignation do to a project that has been in existence for close to 20 years?
There are three things, Peter, you can expect from his statement. One, he's trying to put pressure this time, especially as we are going towards the another last financial year. Maybe that's one assumption. He's trying to put pressure on the government, or especially the Minister of Finance, to allocate more funds to accomplish the long-awaited projects to be finished. But second assumption is trying to clean himself of the previous mistakes that the government has been doing to the people. Because remember, he was once in a while, he served also as the Minister of Finance, but before that he served as the Permanent Secretary of the same ministry. So he's trying to clear the ground or to excuse himself from the problems that are facing people there. That might be the second assumption. But third assumption is that, you see, the area is mainly opposition. So he's trying to tell people that he is going to be accountable for the mistakes that have been done by the previous governments.
There's a school of thought among some Tanzania, especially the opposition and civil society groups, that
yes,
the CCM, the ruling party, is to blame for this. CCM has dominated Tanzania's politics since the country gained independence. So if there's a chronic water shortage in this Mwanga district, who is to blame here, and why are they using this as a political tool to get political mileage ahead of next year's elections?
I agree with the civil society organizations, and I agree with the opposition politicians who are saying CCM has to be blamed. It's true, because there's no one else who has been planning for the development. No one else has been allocating funds for these projects. It is the government and the CCM that has been allocating funds. But the problem is the fulfillment of the budgetary allocated funds to those projects, because we can see in the documents a certain amount of money is allocated, but in reality, there's no money going to the projects, and you find that the money is diverted for other uses. And in fact, there's a problem of accountability. There's a problem of mismanagement of public funds, and no one takes responsibility for that.
Faraja Lugumi is a lecturer at the University of Dar es Salaam. He spoke with me from the Tanzanian commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. Botswana's environment and tourism minister says countries in southern Africa are sharply opposed to a proposed United Kingdom measure that will ban the hunting of imported trophies. Dumezweni Ntimkulu this week addressed the British Parliament over Botswana concerns about the legislation. He tells VOA in an exclusive interview that a proposed legislation will backfire, harm local communities, set back conservation efforts, increase poaching and lead to the loss of wildlife habitats. Ntimkulu led a Botswana delegation involving technocrats, traditional leaders and victims of wildlife to the UK Parliament. Dumezweni Ntimkulu tells me that if passed, the legislation will undermine conservation efforts and reduce revenue that helps rural communities in Botswana and sister countries in the region. Here is the conclusion of the conversation.
How crucial is this funding that this trophies contribute to the communities in Botswana, especially in those rural areas that are mostly affected or will be mostly affected by this bill being considered in the British Parliament?
Yeah, if you go to these rural areas, some of them they are 1,000 kilometers away from Habron. That's why we call the hinterland. Very far. If you go there, you'll find that this place is very desolate. You see poverty with your own eyes. And see these things. When we issue this code, it creates some form of income-generating activity for them. Because they are going to need these hunters. They are going to need trackers. They pay them for that service. They are going to need skinners. They pay them for that. They are going to, after killing them, they give them the meat so that they can... because we control hunting. We don't allow them to hunt without the permits. They can't go out and hunt a kudu, an elephant, or whatever. Or a buffer, they can't. And they take care of these things. When they see a stranger around their village who they do not understand, they report to the wildlife officer because they want their income generating activity not to be disturbed or destroyed. That's how tightly these communities, they help us conserve these animals.
What is the overall core message to the British Parliament from you?
Our core message is that we don't need, and when somebody is doing something good, positive, don't discourage him. If somebody is doing something positive, do not discourage Zimbabwe, do not discourage Zambia, do not discourage Namibia, do not discourage Botswana, do not discourage South Africa, do not discourage Tanzania. You see, the problem we are having is that when these things are enforced, we are going to have members of these communities retaliate. They're going to retaliate. And when they retaliate against this animal. And when they retaliate, they won't have any incentive. Like I said, when there is a suspicious movement in their area to report it to wildlife officers. Yeah. And then Botswana again, because these areas, there's the cold area, like in the parks, we have the area where there's no hunting altogether. So these areas that are adjacent to communities, farming communities. They want to have, what their response will be, no, we want to use this land now for farming because we cannot enjoy the fruits of having these elephants here. And once they do that, they're going to move into this wildlife management area.
You mean that Botswana, with neighboring countries, including Zambia, Zimbabwe, South Africa, Namibia, are all against this hunting trophies or import prohibition bill? Unanimous?
Obvious. There's a big trophy hunting business in South Africa. Big, huge business, huge industry. So in Botswana, at least they hunt these animals in the wild. In South Africa, they breed them. They breed them for hunting. Now, look, if somebody has invested in South Africa, let me say, 50 million, and then he's suddenly told that he cannot carry on with that business. That's devastating. It's devastating to the economy, to the economy of the SADC region. You see, our president last year, he offered 8,000 elephants to the Angolan president. You know, these elephants, they can't go to Angola. And we told them, come and take them so that you can populate your areas with elephants. Some of them, they ran away a long time back. And come and get these elephants so that you can put them. Because of the Unita Wars, if you remember, Savimbi. We said, come and take these. And even yesterday, I also rhetorically offered one of the British journalists and MPs, come and take 10,000 from them. Because they are too big. We can't afford to have them in that small space of land. They are destroying habitats. They are destroying farmlands. They are killing people. People now live in constant fear of these animals. And you cannot take that away from us to be able to control this exponential number to grow.
Dumezweni Ntimkulu is Botswana's Environment and Tourism Minister. He spoke with me from London.
On this weekend, issues in the news. Will ceasefire negotiations reach an agreement in time to save thousands of starving civilians in Gaza? The unprecedented criteria it takes to declare famine. Plus, will humanity take the action needed to stave off the most dangerous impacts of climate change? Listen this weekend on VOA's Issues in the News.
In South Africa, a parliamentarian from the main opposition Democratic Alliance, or DA, is denying accusations that the group seeks to undermine the independence of the Electoral Commission. Emma Louise Powell, who is the Shadow Minister for International Relations for the DA, says the party wants to ensure the outcome of the coming polls are transparent and credible. Her comments come after 10 political parties, including the DA, petitioned G7 countries to provide resources to help domestic poll observers to monitor the coming elections. Displeased with the petition, leaders from the ANC, including President Cyril Ramaphosa and Naledi Pandor, Minister for International Relations and Cooperation, condemned the DA's request. But Lema Louise Power tells me that the request was aimed at helping prevent attempts to manipulate the outcome of the polls.
So 11 political parties wrote to the G7 nations in February, and 2 weeks ago, the Democratic Alliance, as the official opposition, sharpened that request. We sent it further afield than just to the G7. We sent it to 13 countries, including the United States and the European Union. And what we're asking for is resources are made available to civil society organizations in South Africa to boost the deployment of additional independent domestic observers, and capacity building for domestic monitors takes place. And then, of course, importantly, that any technological resources that can help to protect South Africa from sinister attempts to potentially manipulate election outcomes by undemocratic foreign governments is also provided.
But Emma, critics of the Democratic Alliance are of the opinion that by making such a request, the DA is undermining the constitutional mandate of the Independent Electoral Commission because it has a track record, they argue, of organizing free, fair, transparent, and credible elections in South Africa.
We have full faith in the Independent Electoral Commission at a national or structural level to conduct a free and fair election. However, South Africa is a large country. We've got 9 provinces, or what you would call states. Many of these are very rural. There are close to 24,000 voting stations. And we know from previous elections that errors and anomalies take place at individual voting stations. We saw it in the 2021 election. So we need as many boots on the ground and eyes on the individual voting stations as we can get. And then just to say that election monitoring and the deployment of both international and domestic observers is totally standard practice in all democracies. I mean, the ANC, our government, themselves deploy election observers to other countries. I can give numerous examples. So we're not undermining the credibility of the IEC.
The African National Congress appears not to be happy with the Democratic Alliance's request. They are of the view that by such a request, you are literally mortgaging the sovereignty of South Africa and thereby undermining the territorial integrity of South Africa, which they think and say is unacceptable.
It's clear that the ANC's ferocious response, and we see, if you look at social media, we see the accounts that are driving this narrative. We see interviews that the ANC are doing with international television stations like Russia Today. We know where this narrative is being deliberately manufactured and driven from. And so it's clear that the ANC's ferocious response to our request and to the request of 11 opposition parties in South Africa for international observer support is probably because the ANC have something to hide. So before accusing us as the opposition of selling the sovereignty of South Africa to the West, the ANC must tell the people of South Africa who is funding them and their campaign.
What do you say to your critics who say that by such a request you are inviting international influence and manipulation by external forces to undermine South Africa's democracy and by extension this coming elections?
Well, anybody who says that hasn't actually read the letter from the 11 political parties or from the DA, because we say that in the absence of our government having granted permission for additional contingents of international monitors, we are asking foreign governments who have got funding and a lot of foreign offices and state departments in the developed world have got pro-democracy programs. We are saying if you have got resources available, direct them into civil society organizations already working in South Africa that will assist these organizations. And we're not giving anybody a list of who it is that they should be directing resources. We're saying there are loads of NGOs and civil society actors in South Africa that are trying to bridge this gap. If you have got resources available, please direct them to these organizations so that we can boost the deployment of additional independent domestic observers. The Democratic Alliance, as the official opposition, has not asked for any resources for our party, and neither have the other 10 parties that have sent the same request.
Emma Louise Powell is the Shadow Minister for International Relations for South Africa's main opposition Democratic Alliance, or DA. She spoke with me from Cape Town, South Africa. In Zambia, the chairperson of the Movement for Democratic Change, or MDC, for Disabilities is calling for a political space to be created for persons with physical impairments in all of the country's decision-making process. Madam Sela Brotherton also says persons with disabilities should not be subjected to competition in local-level elections. Her remarks come as the country readies for elections for World Development Committees. Brotherton says the government should implement a policy that ensures that at least a seat is reserved for persons with disabilities in the committees. She tells me that the deliberate steps need to be taken to ensure they have effective representation from local to national levels.
As persons with disabilities, we need to be included at all decision-making processes of the country as persons with disabilities.
So why do you think space has not been created for persons with disabilities? Is it a wrong notion? Is it people's mindset? What is it?
It could be the people's mindset, and this goes to both. For us as persons with disabilities, we need also to develop ourselves and have confidence for us to be there and represent ourselves. We need also self-confidence to be able to be there, because most of our issues are not being implemented. Zambia is one of the countries which has got very good laws and policies concerning persons with disabilities and inclusion. But when it comes to implementation, has been a bit of a challenge.
Sarah, some people are suggesting that perhaps persons with disabilities are to blame because the laws are there, platforms have been created. They are just not taking advantage of the situation to bring themselves up for elections, to compete in elections just like everybody else.
Of course, you could be right on that one, and also at the same time wrong, because the issue here is that, of course, there are a few of them who have managed to get into parliament, for example, but those who have tried, they have faced a lot of resistance from the community, because the community has failed to accept and embrace persons with disabilities. We had the one incident where our colleague tried to stand, even resigned from his well-paying job and stood as a member of parliament in the last elections. But what he faced on the ground was very, very challenging, you know. So despite people saying what they are saying, it also takes a lot of things. You talk about resources, you talk about people's attitude on the ground. Those who have got the resources to try and stand, they face resistance. It is a very complex issue, so to speak.
Sarah, some people are suggesting that the MDC, the party that you belong to, is in alliance with the ruling party. It's on you to also push the ruling party, the UPND, to create the space for persons with disabilities. How do you respond to that?
I must say that, of course, the pushing is there, and we have seen some movement when the elections were won in 2021. Certain positions were created for persons with disabilities in terms of boards and commissions. We have representation in police, commission of police. We have representation in not government. Unfortunately, our colleague also passed on, may her soul rest in peace. We are pushing, and there are some movements.
So, if you were to meet President Hakainde Hichilema today, what would be your message to him?
I will inform him that, sir, we thank you. You have done something for us when you came in as a president by creating this space where you have appointed other people in these commissions. But, sir, we need much more, that we need representation in parliament and also at cabinet level, because that's where policies and laws are being made. So we can make and create an impact by also probably advising other lawmakers and policymakers on the importance of inclusion of persons with disabilities, so that they will learn what our challenges are by speaking to us directly, not just by reading from the papers.
Madam Stella Brotherton is the chairperson of the Movement for Democratic Change, or MDC, for Disabilities. She spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. This is The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs, and music from our collection. But first, it's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. The 13th edition of the Africa Games ended on Saturday after 20 days of competition in Accra, Ghana. Egypt won the Africa Games after coming tops with 101 gold, 46 silver, and 42 bronze medals. Team Nigeria came second behind Egypt, winning a total of 120 medals, comprising of 47 gold, 33 silver, and 40 bronze medals won across 25 sports. South Africa took the third place after amassing a total of 106 medals, which include 32 gold, 32 silver, and 42 bronze medals. Of the 54 countries in Africa, 53 were in attendance, with only Cape Verde absent from the 13th edition of the Games, which kicked off on March the 8th, 2024. In athletics, the entry list for the World Athletics Cross Country Championships Belgrade 2024 has confirmed that 485 athletes from 51 teams will descend on Serbia for the global event on Saturday, 30th of March. A total of 205 athletes, 138 men, 107 women are entered for the individual senior races, while 187 athletes, which include 95 men and 92 women, will be in action in the under-20 races. In the mixed relay, 12 countries have been entered. Kenya topped the medal table at the last edition of the World Athletics Cross Country Championships in Bathurst, Australia in 2023 with a total of 6 gold medals. And now to football news, where some African countries were involved in friendly matches played on Saturday as the FIFA international window continues. Zambia played a 2-2 draw with Zimbabwe, but Zimbabwe won 6-5 on penalties. At the Bingu National Stadium in Lilongwe, Malawi, Kenya defeated host Malawi 4-0, while African champions Ivory Coast played a 2-2 draw with Benin Republic at the Stade de la Licorne in Amiens, France. Another goalless draw was recorded at the Cairo International Stadium in Egypt, where Tunisia played Croatia, but Croatia went on to win 5-4 on penalties. Staying with football news, Cameroon's Football Federation Fecafoot has cleared Nathan Douala to play in the country's elite league playoffs without revealing how the international midfielder proved his identity following allegations of age cheating. The 17-year-old, who was part of the Indomitable Lions squad at this year's Africa Cup of Nations, was among 62 players suspended by Fecafoot for double identification. It came amid accusations he had previously played in the Cameroonian league using the name Alexandria Badeli, with his registration stating he was over the age of 21. In netball news, three countries, South Africa, Malawi, and Zambia, have qualified for the World Cup set to take place in Gibraltar next year. South Africa Baby Proteas booked their place at the Netball World Youth Cup 2025 in Gibraltar after beating Malawi in the final of the Netball World Youth Cup 2025 African Regional Qualifiers played at the University of Pretoria's Rembrandt Hall in Gauteng, South Africa, on Saturday the 23rd of March 2024. And that's it for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline, Africa Sports. And now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's One Man's Point of View with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Today, the voters of Senegal have been casting the votes for the legislature and also to determine who will be their next president. They reach this position because the people of Senegal endeavored to maintain the high credit of having a really democratic society. So we will wait and see the results. But for now, it's important to underline that President Macky Sall may be correct when he said that he was not to blame for the confusion that ensued when the date was changed. But it's also necessary to give credit to the people of Senegal because they might have in mind what happened in the Democratic Republic of the Congo some time ago under the Kabila regime by moves made by the Constitutional Court, the incumbent, and the Election Commission. Kabila was able to go beyond his mandate twice, and that may account for the reluctance of the majority of the people of Senegal to tamper with the date for elections. This vigilance that has been shown by the people of Senegal may be required as in the next 2 months we follow the up and down of the election campaign in South Africa. It is no secret that throughout the international community, the outcome of South Africa results are being watched closely. We must not forget that South Africa has come under severe criticism for having the audacity of taking Israel to the International Court of Justice on the charge of genocide. Last week, the foreign minister of South Africa paid a visit to Washington. She said clearly that the South African government had no quarrel with the federal government itself, but that there are many in Congress who are saying things which she believed are wrong, and she is taking the trouble to come to Washington to correct this misconception. One should also think clearly that in South Africa, contrast to what's happening in Senegal today, the people did not directly elect the president. They elect the legislature, and the legislatures elect the president. And that makes things so complicated. Most of the analysts in South Africa are citing polls and making the conclusion that the first time since 1994, the ANC would fall below 50%. And that meant that the whole issue will be complicated, if not handled careful, in the assembly. One should bear in mind also that future generations of South Africans had bled blood, sweat, and tears to achieve black majority rule. But 30 years on, there is a grave danger that some kind of political managing within the assembly, that may go away. And things are more complicated because we have in the election two former President Mbeki, and you have also the incumbent president. Zuma was the man who eased out Mbeki from the presidency. And Cyril Ramaphosa was the man who, on the basis of corruption, edged out Zuma. So yeah, you have the complications. So as I mentioned before, keep an eye on the elections in South Africa. Africans must bear in mind, as I believe many in the global south is doing now, only internal vigilance is the price of freedom. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from our collection.
But I still need love, cause I'm just a man. These nights never seem to go to plan. I don't want you to leave, will you hold my hand? Oh, won't you stay with me? Cause you're all I need. This ain't love, it's clear to see. But darling, stay with me. Why am I so emotional? It's not a good look and some self-control. And deep down I know this never works. But you can lay with me so it doesn't hurt. Oh, won't you stay with me? Cause you're all.
Fine. You're crazy and I
Our Sunday music spot. I hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English to Africa service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Peters and engineer the great Justin Thwaite, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, he who looks for honey must have the courage to face the bees. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.